Chris Crum, explain for us who is eligible for public financing of their campaigns.
Well, under the judicial public financing law that was enacted in 2004, people who are running for races for Court of Appeals or the State Supreme Court can receive a grant from the fund to help run their campaigns if they raise 350 small donations from voters in North Carolina. And the idea is that they can show that they're viable candidates and have the support of voters in the state, that they'll get a grant to help run their campaigns, to help level the playing field so they don't have to be out hustling for money while they're running for one of these offices.
Candidates who agree to strict fundraising and spending limits are eligible.
If they raise those small donations, they then agree not to raise any more from big special interest donors. And if they agree to that, they will receive a grant, which is based on what about the average amount it took to run a race for the Court of Appeals or for the State Supreme Court.
And how is the program funded?
The program had two main fundraising streams. One was a tax checkoff for state tax reforms. You were asked if you wanted to support the North Carolina Public Campaign Fund. And then the other was a $50 fee for attorneys. And they weren't about equal, but together they had raised all the money that was needed for the fund. And it had enough in the fund to run for about two more cycles.
When this program was first enacted and became a law, did it have overwhelming support, or was it a close vote to enact this program?
It did have broad support. In fact, one of the biggest supporters was former Republican Governor Holshouser, who just passed away, and him and Governor Hunt, the Democrat, had joined together to do public service announcements saying that they disagreed on many things, but this is one thing they agreed on, that special interest money shouldn't interfere in court. So it did pass, but there was opposition from the very beginning, and one of the legislators that led the charge at the very beginning was Art Pope, discount retail business owner, who opposed the program from the very beginning.
During this current session and the development of the new state budget, what was proposed for this particular program?
Well, it started in March, where Art Pope was now the director of budget policy under Governor Pat McCrory. And in the budget that McCrory and Pope unveiled in March, they zeroed out this program, not the money from the attorney fees, but any of the money that came from the tax checkoff. That was going to be taken out of the fund, and then the remaining money was going to be spent on something else related to judicial races. So that was the first kind of sign that this program was in jeopardy, was in the governor's budget. Then came the Senate budget, which proposed also eliminating the fund, zeroing out the money that could be taken out, and then diverting the other money. And then again, the House budget, when that came up for discussion in the last 2 weeks, had a similar proposal.
In May, it was reported that quite a number of Court of Appeals judges asked state lawmakers to leave the program intact. What was the response to that?
The program was very popular with judges. 80% of those who are eligible since the law came into effect in 2004 had used it. And it was seen as a way that to ensure that I level the playing field. Also, judges didn't want to have to spend all their time raising money, and they also liked the idea that it didn't make it look like they were beholden to any special interest. So 80% conservatives, liberals, and in-between had used it. And then in May, the Court of Appeals, all but one of them, said that this was a good program and it should be left alone. There wasn't a response, really, on the Senate side. And the budget that we saw both in the Senate and the House continued with the idea of zeroing out the budget for the program.
Explain the compromise that Representative Jonathan Jordan of Ashe County proposed.
Well, what Jordan proposed was the budgets that the governor and the Senate and House leadership had floated would have zeroed out the funding for the program and eliminated the program. Instead, what Jordan proposed was a compromise that would take out wouldn't collect the tax on the tax forms, the money coming from that, but it would leave in place the lawyer's fees. And that would have dramatically reduced the amount of money in the fund, but it would have allowed it to continue at least at a lower level for a few more cycles. And by all signs, it looked like they had enough Republicans and Democrats supporting that compromise to get it passed.
What happened at that point?
From a number of people who are on the House floor say, soon after that amendment was floated by Representative Jordan, Art Pope, the budget director under Governor Pat McCrory, came to the General Assembly and conferred with Representative Jordan. And we don't know exactly what was said in that meeting, but by the time it was over, Jordan withdrew his amendment, and with it, really any hopes amongst the advocates of the program of saving it in the General Assembly.
What's Art Pope's connection to Representative Jordan?
Well, you could say that Pope had an instrumental role in launching Representative Jordan's career. First, Jordan had worked at the John Locke Foundation, one of the think tanks that's largely funded by Art Pope's family foundation, a conservative think tank based in Raleigh. He worked there in the 1990s. But more recently, in 2010, when Representative Jordan first ran for office in the 93rd House District, he benefited from over $100,000 in spending linked to Mr. Pope, both from Art Pope's family and also outside spending groups like Americans for Prosperity, Civitas Action, and Real Jobs NC that spent money on behalf of Jordan's campaign. And that really was crucial to helping Jordan his entree into politics and getting elected in 2010.
You reported that a total of more than $100,000 came into his campaign.
Yeah, and that was a mix of about $16,000 from Pope family, Art Pope himself and his close family members, and then also the outside spending by groups that were running issue ads and other advertisements and spending that benefited Representative Jordan's campaign, and that was the groups like Americans for Prosperity, Civitas Action, and Real Jobs NC, which are groups funded in which Pope has an instrumental role in organizing and backing.
What does Representative Jordan have to say about his decision to pull his amendment?
Well, we haven't seen a public statement by Representative Jordan on the issue. Mr. Pope himself issued what appears to be a non-denial, where he just said that he did confer with Representative Jordan, and he wouldn't disclose the details of what was said. One interesting question is what Mr. Pope, why he was there, in what capacity, because the amendment itself was revenue neutral, so there was no reason for the budget director to be there. So it does raise a question about exactly in what capacity was Mr. Pope talking with Representative Jordan in the first place.
The John Locke Foundation has argued for years that public financing is bad for taxpayers and bad for democracy. And they do point out that taxpayers don't support the voluntary checkoff system. I think they've said 6 to 7% of all taxpayers actually made a $3 contribution. Is the program simply ineffective when it comes to voluntary contributions?
Well, enough people had made the voluntary contributions, and that's critical to note because at times some groups have called it compulsory or that people are being forced. But it's entirely voluntary, and it had raised enough money between that and the lawyer's fees to keep the program running, and it had money in the bank to keep the program going. And I think it just gets to a kind of maybe an ideological or political difference that they just didn't oppose this reform, although it had been upheld by courts and had been widely supported by judges who were eligible for the program.
Initially, the $50 charge to lawyers was voluntary as well, and the participation level was also very low, and the legislature revisited the issue and made it compulsory.
Yeah, the idea was that this was part of ensuring that the courts wouldn't have the appearance of being influenced with special interest donors. And it's interesting, there was a kind of a pro-business argument that was made by legislators from West Virginia when they came down, because they recently passed a reform based on the North Carolina model. They said businesses like it when they see that they don't have to worry about favors being called in the courts by donors, that if there's an understanding that special interest money hasn't played a role in who gets elected, that's good for business as well as good for politics.
So explain then for us, what is it that conservatives are concerned about with this particular funding of judicial races?
Well, I think from Pope's view, they always had a suspicion of campaign finance reforms. They view kind of the with money being speech in their view, that you know, kind of unlimited money is unlimited speech, and that that should be preserved. The counterargument from the advocates was that that implies that the more money you have, the more speech and say you would have in the elections, and that that created an unequal system that wasn't very democratic. But it was based on that idea of money being speech. But I think you could also say there might be some self-interest involved for a big donor like Mr. Pope, who has enjoyed great success from investing in elections and spending on politicians' behalf, to not be in favor of a system that would curb the role of special interest donors.
It appears at this point, though, that the Senate budget and the House budget zero out this program.
Well, that's the issue, is that as long as the governor's, the House, and the Senate's budget are all in accordance, there's no reason when they go into conference, there's no difference to iron out, as they will on other issues. So as long as those all line up in calling for the elimination of this program, it doesn't look like there's many options left for advocates who supported it.
Chris Crom is the director of the Institute for Southern Studies, which publishes Facing South and Southern Exposure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.